Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be looking at key market themes and a number of UK equities. And to do that, we have with us once more, Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Good morning, John. Good to be back. Thank you.
Alan, we spoke last week in the midst of astronomical volatility in markets. Now, that was just following the mini budgets that we had delivered shortly before that. And, you know, we asked the question at that point in time, you know, is it a time to be stepping back into markets? We looked at Lloyds in particular, as well as Taylor Wimpey. And you know, looking at what we've seen so far, we have seen a rebound in markets. Now, of course, the UK government have U-turned on their pledge to abolish the top level of tax here in the UK. That did give markets a little bit of a cheer because, you know, it suggested they were going to possibly roll back some of their other measures and maybe not be as radical with their spending plan. But of course, we're yet to see the OBR forecast. That's key. But then, yep. You know, it's up in the air when we're actually going to be seeing those, because, you know, they're talking about bringing it forward. And, you know, if you're watching the Conservative conference, everybody seems to be on very different hymn sheets at the moment. Mm. So it's quite difficult to actually know when we're going to get that, Alan. But, you know, looking at, you know, what we've seen since last week, I mean, if we do see a continued breakdown and roll back of the measures and U-turns, I mean, do you think you could see positivity in UK assets going forward, or do you think that this bounce that we've seen in the last week could prove to be a dead cat bounce?
I don't think it's going to be a dead cat bounce. Of course, it's in, you know, really, it's incredibly irresponsible of the government to push a budget out without being accompanied by a formal OBR forecast. You know, the Office of Budget Responsibility, those forecasts really have to sit alongside the measures that the government are introducing. And I think this is where difficulties have arisen. There's of course a new administration in place, and they had an opportunity to really stamp their authority, and take a step away from the previous Johnson administration, and they've only made things worse, and I think blown their credibility at the outset. But having said that, we've got a cocktail of issues that the government having to deal with. Of course, cost inflation burgeoning, continuing to energy price inflation due to Putin and the ongoing war in the Ukraine. Of course, the issue with gas supply and a whole raft of other matters that the government having to battle with. So, in the run up to the Truss administration, of course, Rishi Sunak was advising caution on managing tax cuts and forecasting and everything else. And I think in hindsight now, probably had Rishi got in with his packages instead of Liz Truss, we might be looking at a far more stable market and a market that would have given us a far greater amount of international credibility. But of course, nonetheless, we have a very strong market in London. We've seen this incredible volatility because we're still waiting for those budgetary forecasts. And at the moment, it's very much a trader's market. The pound, of course, has recovered sharply against the dollar. The hope is that what comes out of the Tory conference this week will give a little more visibility going forward. But they've got a huge job on their hands. But nonetheless, you know, there are some opportunities in the marketplace. Traders are having a field day at the moment. Ultimately, London is still seen as the go-to place for companies to raise money. And as we'll see a bit later on in our discussions, if you get it right, it can be a very lucrative opportunity for shareholders.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, when we're looking at these markets now, of course, there was two stocks that we picked up last week, but you know, there's many out there, and we've seen that bounce back in markets. It's not only here in the UK; it is over in the United States as well. I mean, do you think that there's maybe, Alan, at the moment, you know, yes, everybody's been focusing on the UK, and there were sort of talks at one point of the UK potentially causing a global crisis. And I'm sort of looking at the measures that the Bank of England have taken. I think that's probably been averted. But I mean, I think there's two things here. I mean, do you think this will damage the perception of UK assets, you know, particularly, you know, FTSE 100 companies to overseas investors going forward? And, you know, sort of looking at, you know, where we are on the FTSE, we have seen quite a strong bounce back. Yeah. You know, we're trading now above 7,000. There was a base sort of put in around that 6,800 level. Yeah. So you've obviously got one side of it, you know, that there's that perception of UK assets, the FTSE 100, but there's also that defensive nature of the FTSE 100, obviously with being financial stocks in there that are benefiting from higher interest rates. I mean, do you think this builds a situation where we could see, you know, the FTSE 100 just tread water simply for a number of months?
Well, I think it'll tread water, and as we're seeing today, I mean, the FTSE opened at just over 7.040, I think, and popped up to 7.060. It's now just dipped back below 7,000 again. So it's all over the place, and I think as the French Chancellor said himself, you know, he was very worried about the UK economy, but he was worried about it because of there was an absolute vacuum of leadership at the top, when right now there should be strong leadership. But in regard to the companies listed on the FTSE 100, you know, these are great global companies, and they're run by, you know, they're run by great people. And as I've said before in previous podcasts, you know, the companies continue to do what they do. The share price, of course, might tell a different story, but the fact is that in their markets, they're still doing the very best they can do. Along with some great people that help to grow these companies and create prosperity. So no, I'm not worried about the FTSE in the short term. Yeah, we will see some volatility, I believe, and I think we'll see it trade between these within the trading range with possibly 6,800 as a floor. There's still every prospect that as we get nearer December, we could see a bit of a Santa rally in the run-up to Christmas. And of course, we're going to be talking about some of those retailers where the focus will be in the short term. But of course, it is a very tough time with cost inflation and with families uncertain about the sort of the cost they're going to be facing over the next few months.
Indeed, indeed. And we're going to start off today, Alan, with probably one of the most anticipated sets of results that we get from FTSE 100 companies, because it, you know, it does give a broad insight into the health of the UK economy in particular, and that's Tesco's. I'm looking at their shares this morning, and down slightly, not a huge amount, so 2-3%, but they've had their interims out. What do they look like?
Yeah, it's everything's slightly down on the first half performance of last year. So these, of course, compared to last year, group sales have actually risen, which is great. So up 3.1% at actual rates, and the constant rate 3.5%. Seeing a fall in operating profits. Tesco bank numbers down slightly, retail cash flow. But overall, it's a pretty robust performance, and you'd expect that from Tesco because, of course, it still has the largest share, and what it's able to do with the economies of scale. And of course, it also owns Booker as well, the cash and carry organization. Although profits are down, the company is able to focus on the competition, of course, that's coming from the likes of Aldi and Lidl, and they have an Aldi price match offering, low everyday prices, and you know, these cover 8,000 sort of household products week in, week out, so they're in a very good position to attract customers simply because of their pricing, and that's what Ken Murphy, the chief executive, said that they're looking to do. Customers are facing a tough time, watching every penny to make ends meet. So they're laser focused on that value and price matching going forward. And it seems to be working for them. You know, that they have a good strong reach of stores across the UK and petrol stations, and they're very much entrenched in the UK as the go-to retail outlet. And I think there's some confidence in the group going forward. They've raised the interim dividend from 3.2p last time to 3.85p, and that's up 20%. And that to me signals that they're very confident that despite it, what's coming their way in terms of price inflation, in terms of increased energy prices and uncertainty, they will be able to ride out the challenges on costs and be able to offer be able to provide a competitive retail offering to the marketplace, and that's vital, and it's vital. And I think when a company like Tesco's puts out a signal like that, that gives other retailers confidence, because it means people will be going to the superstores. So of course all of the stores that are located near the Tesco's will see some spin-off benefit from that too. But it's going to be tough on them going forward. But I think where Tesco is, given its guidance, is now reduced slightly for the full year to 2.4 billion, 2.4 billion pounds for the full year. I think they've built in a margin for the uncertainty going forward and any other shocks that might come in terms of energy price increases and anything else. So it's certainly I don't hold Tesco. I used to hold Tesco shares, but I will be looking at this now as a hold. I know the share price is slightly down this morning. It's down. It's obviously seen a big drop over the past year, and we're down 1.8% today so far. But I think given that there's a 5.3% dividend yield and the group has raised the dividend, I think going forward, this is certainly one to carry on holding.
Yes. And I'm just looking at the dividend here, up 20%. They're in line with their dividend policy there of paying interim dividend of 35% of the prior full year dividend. So one for income investors there. You know, it's not the best yield you can get out there in the FTSE 100. But certainly a company like Tesco's that has the reliable cash flows, as you've outlined, Alan. One that's maybe, for an investor that's maybe seeking some stability in these volatile times, maybe one to look at for the dividend. So now moving on, Alan, we've got a company that's come to market with a backdrop of volatility here and also in a particularly challenging sector. However, this IPO has been nothing but successful. If you look at the IPO price and where it's trading now, and they had an update yesterday, which we're going to go through. It's First Class Metals, Alan. Would you be able to give us a brief rundown of them and where they are now?
Certainly. I mean, this is, if you want to IPO your company and you want to learn how to do it, this company has written the book on it. They've just had a phenomenal time. They came to market in the summer with a valuation of 6.5 million sterling, and they IPO'd at 10p, and share price as I'm looking at it now live is just over 15p. For shareholders involved in the IPO, I was also lucky enough to take part in that. There are warrants as well within that. So we're going to see, I think, a lot of warrants exercise in the coming weeks and months, but with good reason. So First Class Metals have a package of assets within the Schreiber-Hemlo Greenstone Belt, which is it's a very fertile mineral belt on the north coast of Lake Superior. Some of the assets are close to the Barrick-Hemlo or the Barrick-Hemlo gold mine, 21 million ounces of gold total production to date, and there are a bunch of other assets around there. The Sugar Zone to the east, 17 million ounces of gold, many other gold mines and mines under exploration currently, under construction rather, along that belt. There have been two announcements this week that have really driven the price. Yesterday, we the company announced that as well as the existing assets it has, it's moved into a potential acquisition transaction with Newinsco Resources for the Sunbeam project, which is also in Ontario. And this consists of three different gold mining operations: Sunbeam, Pettigrew, and the Roy mines. The Sunbeam mine, there's an awful lot of history there. There are images on that announcement of the mine in operation in 1905. There's already some 50 to 70,000 tons of gold at 13 grams per ton remaining in the old workings in there. So this is hugely exciting. It's as though the company's moved from being an explorer almost to becoming a producer. And this is quite a rarity, and it just shows the caliber of the board and the team involved in bringing this to market. In addition, the purchase or the acquisition costs, which will be at about $1 million, will be financed by a convertible loan note from long-term shareholders Sanderson Capital Partners and also Afzal Varley. This is great news because it means that there will be no further dilution from existing shareholders. So existing shareholders in the company will see the benefits of this as the Sunbeam asset develops. But if you read the announcement from yesterday, look at the grades, look at the history of these assets. This is a huge addition to the group and one that materially changes the valuation of the group alone. And as if that weren't enough, going back to the original assets the group has, the flagship asset is the Hemlo North asset, and this is contiguous to a series of assets to the northeast of the Barrick Hemlo mine, owned by Palladium One, and there's a joint venture with Palladium One on an area called Pickle Lake. Drilling had taken place there, and the area was prospective for nickel and copper and massive, what referred to by first class as massive nickel copper sulfides. And indeed, the assays that came back from the first drill hole drilled there were of exceptionally high grade, 4.8% nickel, 3.7% copper. So that's a 6.8% nickel equivalent over 1.8 meters. And that's a huge step forward and a huge endorsement for an asset that I know Mark Sale, the CEO, and his team were very excited about going forward. But I think when the company came to market, they promised a literal avalanche of news flow, and they're absolutely delivering. And I think the way the company's planned out its exploration work, the way the company's planned out its news flow, the delivery of its news flow across social media. If any company is looking to list, look at what these guys have done. They've actually written the book on it. But also, what it does show is that if an IPO is organized correctly, then shareholders. Stand to take part in something that's hugely profitable. So already, people that participated in the IPO, their investments are worth are up 50%. Plus, they have the warrants and everything that go with it. So when you're looking at an IPO, obviously do your homework. Look at it correctly. Look at the people involved. Look at the board. Because I think if you looked at First Class from the outset, particularly as they were one of the last companies to come to market on the London main market, of course, the benchmark for listing is now 30 million minimum. They were just through in time. They got their application through just in time. So they were able to list on the London main market with a 6.5 million market cap. But hugely exciting, and still very much a sense that we're just right at the start of the journey with First Class Metals. So well done, guys.
Yes, certainly. Looking at that price, And maybe a conservative IPO price there, but certainly for those investors now, we're very happy with being involved in that. And it's not often that you see an IPO trade at such a premium in such a short period of time. So it'll be interesting to see how that performs going forward and certainly bucking the trend of what's been quite a subdued junior explorer sector so far this year. So staying on commodities now, Alan, we're going to move to the North Sea and Deltic Energy. They've got a number of assets there. And of course, with a backdrop of the energy crisis and the UK obviously wanting to secure more domestic sources of energy, you know, that assets there are, you know, really coming into play. So would you like to give us a brief breakdown of Deltic Energy, please, Alan, and what has been, you know, quite interesting developments recently?
Yeah, so this is, as you saw, the backdrop of the current energy crisis and steps the government are taking to resolve this. On Monday this week, I did mention this on another channel, but on Monday this week, there was an article in the Financial Times that the government have decided to fast-track North Sea gas field permits to boost UK production. And most years, the government, as we know, has a licensing round for assets and fields for exploration in the North Sea and other areas. And this is the 33rd licensing round for companies. And obviously, with this special boost and the special priority that the government are placing on this, it's hugely important. And certainly, the chief executive of the North Sea Transition Authority, Andy Samuels, said they would fast track applications for discoveries in the southern North Sea, and they expect to grant, I think, up to 100 permits. So I've looked at the companies engaged in the North Sea. Obviously, there are some big players, but I think also there are opportunities for small companies, microcaps, to, you know, if they win these licenses and they have a good portfolio of assets, to really exponentially grow their business. And Deltic, I think, looks a really, really good example. So Deltic Energy is currently worth 62 million. It's on the London main market. The shares are currently trading at 3.5p or 3.3p, been a size 4.2p on the year, just can't come back off recent year highs to a year low back in December last year of 1.85p. Deltic has a number of assets. It has its two, I guess you'd say, flagship assets are the Pensacola exploration well, which is a joint venture with Shell. They're due to commence drilling on that well in October this year, and they're targeting there an estimated 309 billion cubic feet of natural gas. So, you know, if they tap into that, as hoped for and expected, that's going to be hugely important as a supply for UK gas if they can tap into it in time for the end of the year. Of course, the upcoming winter of discontent. So the Pensacola exploration well, if you look at the wells, if you go to the Deltic website, there's a map which shows the location of the wells. And from the Wash in Norfolk upwards, these wells are dotted just off the eastern coast of the UK, all the way up to just south of Scotland. So the second, what Deltic refer to as a company making exploration well, is the Selene prospect, which contains an estimated 318 billion cubic feet of natural gas. So those two alone coming on stream are going to be a company changing event, but also be hugely important for the UK and of course UK gas supplies going forward. There's another joint venture, the Deltic Capricorn joint venture, has five North licenses in the southern North Sea, and it's currently taking delivery of new 3D seismic data on one of those licenses. And also there's the Saras prospect in the central North Sea. The company's just undertaken a farm out process with that. And what the company's done over the summer, it's prepared for this UK offshore licensing round that I mentioned at the start, and it's looking to, it said in its interim results, it's looking to further strengthen and diversify its portfolio. At the end of that period, the company had a strong balance sheet, but a few weeks ago, the company announced a raising ahead of this licensing round. It raised $15 million in the markets with a 2p open offer for investors as well. So a really smart move from the group, and that means it's positioned to progress the Pensacola and Saline wells, and also, of course, it's in pole position now for the licensing round. And certainly Graham Swindells, the chief executive there, said that, you know, in the interim results, very excited and about the outlook for the company, very proud of what they'd achieved in the year so far. You know, Pensacola and Saline prospects alone contain over 600 billion cubic feet of natural gas. And, you know, it's going to be an incredibly exciting couple of months. And I think the fact that the share price has come off these year highs, obviously the money's now raised, so they're preparing now to undertake that drilling. And, of course, bid for these licensing assets in the Southern North Sea in this licensing round. I think the company's, you know, poised on, it's on the verge of great things. And I think there could be a material change in the valuation of the company in the coming months.
It's quite interesting at the moment, Alan, because we're starting to see, you know, after a long period of fossil fuels really falling out of favour, not so much oil, but definitely gas and UK gas assets coming back into vogue. I mean, do you think this is something that's sustainable going past, you know, whenever it may be, the end of the conflict in Ukraine? Or do you think this is something that, you know, maybe here for the next sort of 10 to 15 years?
Well, I think this debate's been raging on for the last couple of years, of course, with the moves to sustainable energy and clean energy. Companies are now looking to change course, and so many people will be asking, well, why are we talking about a company that is purely engaged in oil and gas exploration? And the reason to me is clear. I think the idea that we're going to switch to fully to clean energy resources completely in the next 10 to 15 years is daft. We're entrenched in our consumer infrastructure. The supply infrastructure is entrenched in the supply of oil and gas. So it's going to take, a generation or two for that to fully change. And of course, you know, the evidence is all around us. We're seeing wind farm generators. We're seeing new technology in clean energy starting to contribute to supply. But nonetheless, where the infrastructure, the consumer infrastructure, is so firmly based around the consumption of oil and gas, you know, that is going to take, several generations to change. So to my mind, in my opinion, I think companies like this, particularly given that we now have this new imperative to find alternative oil and gas supplies, I think this is hugely important. I think companies like Deltic, and I think Deltic is probably one of the purest forms or one of the purest examples of companies engaged in that process. And it's in pole position because it has these assets, it's developing them. And all of a sudden, this energy crisis has arrived and it's got an opportunity to ramp up its production, its exploration, and per se, the size of the company.
Indeed. And there's a few companies out there operating in UK natural gas, which we'll be watching closely and maybe we'll be discussing on the podcast in the coming weeks. So just a rundown there of the companies that we discussed today. First of all was Tesco's, which of course has a ticker of TSCO. It was in First Class Metals with the ticker of FCM. Of course, that was the recent IPO. And we finished off there with the UK natural gas explorer Deltic Energy with a ticker of DELT. Alan, thank you much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
So just as a note to listeners, we held last week the latest instalment of our UK Investor Magazine virtual conferences, and the videos for those are now available on the UK Investor Magazine website. In the video section, you'll find there videos from Vietnam Holding, the Investment Trust, Clean Tech Lithium, and TSX listed TRX goals. Do check those out. Some truly fascinating presentations there from those companies. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.